Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy-Giesch of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to Ignite, the demand generation series for the B2B marketer. This innovative thought leadership series brings you insights, ideas, and practical advice for how you can improve your own demand generation efforts. And certainly, as we look at 2009, this seems to be the single hottest area in marketing. Most companies are struggling with revenue, and they're turning up the pressure to marketing to deliver not just high-quality leads, but new ways to engage and begin the revenue dialogue with prospects and customers. We're entering what I like to term the perfect opportunity for marketing. You've all heard of the perfect storm, where you have a series of conditions that come together to create the biggest storm in history. That's what we have in marketing right now, the perfect opportunity. And the three conditions that I see that are bringing together this perfect opportunity for marketing are, number one, there's a need. More than ever before, our companies are turning to us and saying, how can you help us not just with the high-quality leads, but also have conversations with prospects and with customers that leads into a revenue dialogue? Number two, the second condition, we have the solutions at our fingertips. Now more than ever, there is a plethora of Web 2.0 technologies that help us do our jobs. And the third condition, and the single most important condition, because without this third condition, the other two don't matter, is that buyer behavior has changed radically, even in the last 2 years. And it's this buyer behavior, how our customers and how our prospects are interacting with us online, that is the topic of today's interview. We call this phenomenon digital body language, and this is the title of a great new book authored by Steve Woods, co-founder of Eloqua, and our guest today. And before I introduce Steve, let me tell you a little bit about his background, and I hope I don't embarrass him because he has quite a background. Steve co-founded Eloqua in 1999 and has held the position of chief technology officer since then. Let's think a minute, 1999. Most of us didn't even know the term demand generation until 2 years ago. Steve has probably forgotten more about demand generation and what it takes to produce high-quality leads than most of us will ever know. When Steve came to Eloqua, he brought years of experience in software architecture, engineering, and strategy, and today at Eloqua is responsible for defining the product strategy and the technology vision at Eloqua. But Steve is much more than a technologist. He is a visionary when it comes to demand generation. What does it take to knit together the people, the process, and the technology to really make demand generation a full-fledged competency in an organization? That's really the kind of contribution that Steve has been making to the industry. And he's capped off all that thinking in a great new book called Digital Body Language. And this is a must-read for everybody. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Debbie. It's great to be here today.
Well, it's so wonderful to have you, and I was fortunate enough to get an early copy of the Digital Body Language, and before we kind of get into the book, which I'm so excited about, tell us a little bit more about your background and your role at Eloqua.
Sure, glad to. Yeah, it's an interesting role, and it's been a really interesting time. I think you've captured it really well with the three elements of the perfect storm, perfect opportunity there. And I view the CTO role as an interesting one. It's really a communication role in many ways. In the early days, the communication really was flowing from the market in, and my role in the early days was a little bit more on the technology side, getting out there, talking with people, understanding what they were seeing, what the trends were that were common in the clients we were chatting with, and starting to recognize, as you put it, the change in buyer behavior, the fact that people were now changing the way that they sourced their information. And from that, getting an understanding of what technology we could create that would assist in that would facilitate those trends, and then understanding their internal constituents. You know, the marketers would need to keep the sales organizations happy. Well, what did that mean, and how could we build a piece of technology that would help with that? The communication aspect of the CTO role, though, takes on a second element, and I think that's where the book comes in, which is, now that this technology exists and now that there's been some of these really fundamental changes in the market, in the way that buyers engage with vendors, in the way that marketers engage with their market, the communication role really reverses. And a major element of my role right now is talking about what we can do as marketers to help bring our organizations into today's environment, understanding that buyer behavior has changed, understanding that the needs from our sales organizations have shifted quite a lot, and talk to marketers about how we can evolve our organizations to put together a better demand generation approach to engage with those buyers on their terms and bring those leads into our sales organization. So it really is it's an interesting role. It's really communication from the market to the technology team and then from our team out to the market in terms of what we're able to do.
See, one of the reasons I was so excited about the book is that, you know, demand generation is still a relatively new category for marketing, and there are still relatively few marketers who truly understand what they can do. And so being able to educate marketers into the what can be is one of the reasons why I was so excited about the book. It just takes everything that you just said and kind of gives them a primer. You know, here's how we do it. Here are the things to think about. But I find myself a lot of times spending a great deal of time in trying to educate people. So that's one of the great uses of the book. And I think every MBA program, every marketing program in America needs to make this fundamental reading. I think we're probably away from that. But let's get back to the genesis of the book. What made you decide to write this book?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's interesting. I look at a lot of technologies and the way that they shift markets, and there always seems to be two phases. If you look at music, for example, music, you had your LP and various forms of that with tapes and 8-tracks going all the way back, and then it went digital. You know, you now had digital music. And the first phase of that was very similar. You know, now you had digital music on a CD, but all of the distribution, all of the process around it looked the same as it always had. And then everyone realized that, wait a minute, now that it's all digital, the entire industry can change, and you have iTunes and the evolution of digital music. Same with encyclopedias. You know, you move from the physical bound copies of encyclopedias to Encarta, which is a physical bound copy of an encyclopedia, but in digital form on a CD, same creation methodology, same distribution methodology, more or less, without the door-to-door salespeople. And then Wikipedia comes along and says, wait a minute, now it's all digital. This doesn't have to be the same. Marketing's really in the same secondary phase of its evolution. You look at the early digital versions of marketing. We move from direct mail, which is a mass communication tool outbound, same with television really, to email. And you look at the way that we as marketers all engage with email in the early days, it was a mass communication tool outbound, maybe with a little bit of personalization. But really it was being used in the same way as the old media types. And now marketers are all realizing that, wait a minute, it's fundamentally different now. And demand generation really captures that difference, because the way that buyers have become accustomed to getting their information has fundamentally changed now that it's all digital. And with that, as marketers, we have to really adapt to that. I think as marketers, we're used to understanding who our buyers are. But there's really two elements of that. There's understanding who they are as an individual, some of the static qualities of them, and we've had that baked in with demographics and firmographics and psychographics for a long time as we do sort of segment-based marketing. But now if you look at another element come into play, there's the timing element of who they are as buyers. You know, if you put yourself in the mind of a buyer, well, you as a buyer change on a week-by-week, month-by-month basis. If there's something driving you to be interested in a security product or a new storage device or services and consulting for redoing your CRM implementation, that driver has a very short-term time element to it. It may not have been there last week, and it may not be a major driver 2 months from now. understanding the time element of who buyers are is now a critical thing for marketers, and that's really what digital body language can teach us. So really with the book, I was trying to capture the fundamental transition in marketing that all of information moving digital has enabled, and with that, using digital body language to understand who the people are and also where they are in their buying cycle.
Steve, I love your example of how this transition is taking place. I find myself often struggling to say, this is so different from what you're used to. And I think your examples of the encyclopedia and music, you know, it went to digital, but the distribution part of it didn't change. So fundamentally, it didn't change until it just finally went all online and it was completely digital. I think those are great examples to talk about the transition of marketing and really what the tools like Eloqua really allow marketers to do. So when you think about digital body language, and clearly we've talked a little bit about, you know, this is kind of where the world is going. But why would marketing and sales care? Tell me, you know, we talked a little bit about it, but tell me some more about why marketing and sales should really care about digital body language. And talk about those as separate entities. Why marketing would care and why sales would care.
Sure. That's definitely a key thing to establish. So let me talk first about why sales cares. Because they're really the fundamental driver in this. If you look at one of the big things that has changed as everything goes online and buyer behavior shifts, as we've talked about, well, sales is disintermediated. If you look at sales prior to the internet, they were a main conduit of information. They could show up. They were the ones that had access to the material, the collateral, the education, the demonstrations, the sample products. They had the ability to be that conduit of information, which, okay, that's nice. We've made that more efficient by moving that all digital. But by disintermediating sales, they're no longer in the room. And because of that, and this is the genesis of the digital body language title of the book, sales no longer has the ability to read the room. They no longer have the ability to see the signs of interest, the furrowed brows, the crossed arms, the excitement. They can't read that physical body language, and so they don't understand when a buyer is excited, interested, ready to move forward. And a good salesperson has always had the ability to do that extremely well. The value of a face-to-face meeting to a salesperson has always been incredible because of the insights that they get back as to who that buyer is and how interested they are. So sales really cares about the new world because they've been disintermediated from the old world. And marketing, if you look as marketers, why we're under so much pressure from sales to do more, do better, do faster with the leads that we create for them, in many ways it's because of this disintermediation. Sales is no longer able to understand their own buying audience early in the funnel, so marketing has to work with that audience, understand that audience, and then get the qualified people from that audience out to sales. So marketing has to start understanding their buyer's digital body language in order to meet the need, the new demand from sales. So if you look at marketing's role in this new economy, your marketing still has to be the outbound communication element. It has to replace that information conduit that sales was before, but it also has to replace the insight element of sales. So you have to understand the digital body language by tracking what people have responded to, what they've read, what they've opened, what they've clicked on, what they found interested. Were they searching on Google for a certain product or a certain objection? Did they look at a flash demo? Did they download a sample? And then by understanding what that digital body language means, score those leads, get the hot leads out to sales, take the leads that are not ready to buy yet and put them into a nurture program, analyze the campaigns in terms of their ability to move people through the funnel, and aggregate all of that information together so that you can present to sales the same level of insight that they would have had historically by being in the room with the prospects as they presented them the information face-to-face.
Certainly, Steve, as you talk about this, it just makes so much sense. And yet again, we see that there are many, many marketers who have very little insight to what this whole digital body language thing is really all about. What do you see as the barriers? When you go out and you talk to marketers, I mean, we've been living and breathing this. I've been doing it for 5 years. You've been doing it for 10 years. What are the barriers that you see to them opening up their minds and really beginning to explore the impact of digital body language within their organizations?
Yeah, it really is a transition in marketing. And I think oftentimes that's quite hard because the rest of the organization is expecting a certain role for marketing, and that role has to evolve, that role has to change. Marketers themselves are expecting a certain role for marketing, and that has to change. So skills, behaviors, interactions all have to evolve. The first thing, though, really comes right down to the buyer. You have to, as a marketer, work to understand not just the buyer anymore, but also the buying cycle. What a person goes through as they educate themselves on the market, they understand sort of at a high level what the trends are, as they educate themselves on what vendors are available in that market that can solve the pains that area of the market solves, as they select those vendors, as they validate which one of those vendors will meet their needs. You as a marketer have to really dig in and understand that buying cycle. And here's the hard part, you have to map your communication strategy into that buying cycle. So instead of the campaigns that historically were run on our time frame as marketers, you know, Q1 we're going to launch this big campaign to 50,000, 100,000 recipients, you have to launch a campaign that targets that exact buyer at that exact time according to that buyer's buying cycle with the exact message that's relevant. If they're interested in education, we have to communicate with them about high-level concepts. If they're interested in vendor selection, we have to communicate with them in a way that allows them to compare vendors. If they're interested in validating us as a selection to meet their needs, we have to communicate with them about relevant case studies and proof points. So understanding that buying cycle is a difficult mental shift, and then mapping your communications to that buying cycle so that we can deliver the right content at the right time to the right audience requires a shift from the big outbound campaigns of 100,000 recipients to much more of an inbound automation-based, highly personalized marketing infrastructure. And shifting to that automation-based, highly responsive, highly personalized marketing ecosystem is challenging for marketers because it requires a different shift in mentality, a different shift in skill set. So the evolution is very much happening, but I think we're seeing an evolution in the skills, in the techniques, in the metrics involved in marketing, and it takes time.
I think those are fabulous comments around, you know, the buy cycle versus the sales cycle, because clearly so many of us have been indoctrinated for years to talk about the sales cycle. But in this new age of digital behavior, it really is about the buy cycle. So let me ask you this question. And again, I always talk to my customers about the buy cycle as well. Quite often I get this glazed look, what is she talking about? If you were to take a look at the most successful demand generation marketers, what percentage of those do you think have nailed their buy cycle?
Well, I think it's, you know, if you chatted with any of the ones that are really extraordinary, they'd all say, I still haven't nailed it enough. You know, it's that relentless search for perfection, where the better you are, the more you know that you need to become even better. Some of them have done an extraordinarily good job. You look at some of the folks in open source, for example. Chatting with Michelle Perry at SourceFire the other day, she's a great marketer, and she's got a great team underneath her running marketing operations. And they've got a very interesting buying cycle there because open source, you end up with an interesting problem. You have almost too many leads because you've got in the SourceFire case, they've got a freely available, very high-quality security software called Snort that they give away for free, and then they have an enterprise product called SourceFire that they sell on top of that. But the volume of leads they get from the downloads of their free product is astronomical. So for them to turn that into an economic success as a business, they really have to understand the evolution of what a company, not just a person, goes through from downloading their free software, to installing it, to becoming successful, to understanding how an enterprise can adopt a security software suite, and then evolving into an evaluation of the SourceFire Enterprise product. So it becomes a very complex buying cycle with multiple people involved, because often the decision maker is not necessarily the technologist who originally downloaded the software. But if you look at what Michelle and Karen and her team do, they spend a ton of time trying to understand what's going on in that buyer's head, what's going on in that organization as they evolve from trialing a free piece of software to evaluating the purchase of an enterprise software suite. So, you know, the marketer's job is never done. And I don't think even Michelle would say, yes, I absolutely understand the buyer's cycle. But I'd say of the successful marketers, they all think about their market in terms of the buyer cycle and in terms of the seller and in terms of the buyer's behavior.
That's a great example. And again, you do have to obsess over thinking through what this behavior means, and also how can you set up situations where you can engage in certain kinds of behavior so that it tells you a story. It tells you it's the body language, right? You have to read the body language, but you have to invite them to the meeting at the same time. So I think that's a great example. On the buy cycle again, Steve, what have you seen as far as companies who are just beginning the demand generation efforts? What have you seen for how they actually go out and map their buy cycle? Have you seen any techniques or any processes that you could pass along to our audience for how do you find out and how do you engage in a buy cycle process?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you need to do, I'd say, is watch and listen. You know, understand what your buyers are doing, understand what they're looking for. Cadient's a great example, and they happened across this one spontaneously. They'd done a rebranding to the name Cadient. And so as part of that, they ended up redoing a lot of their search engine optimization. And they realized that the way that they had thought about their product was not quite the way that the audience was thinking about it. And they just happened upon this realization as they're looking through the search terms that people are using as they redo their search engine optimization. And they sell software for sales effectiveness. I'm not going to do it justice. But what they ended up realizing was that there was an audience out there that was looking for sales coaching that could leverage the software tools that Cadient had put together. And the audience didn't necessarily know that the pain that they were having and the solution that they had envisioned in their mind could actually be solved by a completely different approach. So just by getting out there and listening to how buyers were seeking information, in this case in search, let Cadient in to some great insights. So listening is really, you know, part one of that framework. Just listen, go through the data, look for trends, put yourself in the mindset of a buyer, and you'll come up with some great insights if you haven't done this before. The second thing really is set your information free. So Xeros, for example, they're in a niche space, master data management. They're a relatively new entrant with a new approach, and they took the approach of, we are going to educate the market on master data management. And they put together contests, they put together a master data management university. And by doing so, they established the site and the presence and the thought leadership around marketing data management, and allowed their marketing team to get incredible insights into how buyers went through the education process around what master data management could do for their business, how to think about it, how to evaluate. So they just took all the information that they had and invested it in this master data management university. And by doing that, got not just the thought leadership and some of the leads out of it, but a deep understanding of how the buyers went through the education and solution selection process. And through that has enabled them to really leverage those insights into other areas of their marketing business. So really as the first two steps, I'd say listen, set your information free, and really approach the market from the mindset of the buyer. And you'll see your organization in a whole new light, and that'll really give you insights into how to think about your demand generation efforts.
I think that's great stories and great examples of how companies can do this if they have not done that before. So as you and I are talking about digital body language and we're talking about the buy process, some marketers who are listening to this for the first time may be shaking their heads and saying, what are they talking about? Yet at the same time, they know that they're being pressured to create more leads, more high-quality leads, and to find new ways to begin revenue-generating discussions within their company. For those marketers who are just embracing this whole idea, what guidance would you give them, Steve, besides, number one, please go read this book because it in one place encapsulates so many of the ideas that are floating around the market right now. But what would your advice be?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I was watching one of those classic videos the other day. It was a similar thing. It was from 1981, and it was a newscast talking about this absurd idea that very techie-oriented scientists were experimenting with, that one day you could get your news on a computer. It was absurd. And you could tell in this newscaster's voice that she was kind of appalled to actually have to give this story because it was just sort of, you know, aliens from outer space style absurdity. And I think in many ways that the trends that are happening in the marketing and demand generation space are kind of similar. You know, if you look back on today, 10 years from now, it's going to seem laughable that there was any consideration that yes, of course, it's a buying cycle, not a selling cycle. Yes, of course, the buyer is now in control and seeks their information and takes control of the buying process based on having control of that information. So, you know, I would say if someone is just embracing these concepts right now, the first step really is to, you know, understand that this is a tidal wave of a trend that is hitting the marketing organization. The faster that you can get in front of it, the better that you do. The organizations that have embraced this and said, you know what, information is free, I'm going to get out there, and in an unbiased way, I'm going to get that information out to my audience, they're doing well. And it doesn't matter on where. Some people are doing this with online sites, with newsletters. Some people have done it with a variety of social media techniques. The technology is not that important, whether it's on Twitter or on Facebook or on a website or on a blog. It's more the concept. Give control to the buyer. Let that buyer discover you rather than pushing your message to the buyer. Put yourself in the mindset of the buyer. We're all buyers as much as we are marketers. And put yourself in the mindset of that buyer and realize that you also prefer to discover information and to find information and to have that information not appear salesy but to appear credible. And those are the vendors that you seek out and that you select. And the second thing I'd say is embrace the new generation in the workforce. Some of these folks that are coming in have grown up completely digital. This is how they get their information. Bounce the ideas off of some of the youngest folks in your organization. Get their honest perspective on how they would go about seeking this information. And you'll find some interesting insights. You know, it might be through social media. It might be through search. It's unlikely going to be through information that is not free or that is pushed on them. That is very unlikely to be the way that they discover information. The third thing I'd say is embrace operations. Marketing historically has been a very creative discipline, very copy-oriented discipline, a very graphics-oriented discipline. And if you think about one of the underlying trends that has to happen for us to get the targeting, the timing, and the content perfect towards where that buyer is in their buying cycle, one of the things that we have to get nailed down is the operations, making sure that our data is accurate, making sure that our marketing is all centralized in one system, making sure that our communications can be automated. So make sure you've got folks on your team who live and breathe flow charts, live and breathe data, live and breathe automation, because from that base, you can build the ability to get the right message to the right buyer at the right time. So I just say dive in.
Three great steps. I mean, I completely agree with that, and I think any marketer would be well served to take that advice. One of the things that you said, and this is our final question, is that, you know, the technology really doesn't matter. It really is about that process, that buying process, that digital body language. And yet we live in a world where technology is transforming our lives. And the example that you gave, you know, if you wonder how to do something, go ask someone who grew up on digital, and that is their whole world. They'll have a completely different perspective of that. So clearly technology is a driver, along with some basic changes in behavior. So as you look at technology, one of the things that marketers like to talk about is social media and what kind of impact that is going to make on their lead generation efforts. So again, in your capacity as co-founder and technology visionary for Eloqua, what are the technology trends that you see that you may want to share some ideas with our audience?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I get asked about social media all the time. And I think really it's one of those things where at a high level, social media is a continuation of the trend of the buyer being in control. The conversations are happening out there. The education is happening peer-to-peer, not vendor-to-consumer. And social media has a huge evolution of tools. You've got your Facebook, you've got your Twitter, you've got your various lenses and aggregators. I would say don't get too caught up in the tools. Some tools and some sites will be more relevant for your audience as a marketer of whatever product you market, and some will be less. But get caught up in the transition of the buyer behavior. Social media has really continued that trend of the buyer being in control, and it's given you as a marketer, it's given all of us as marketers, the ability to see into the conversations that are happening. We all knew that the conversations were happening out there, but now you've got the ability to look into it. So, you know, take a tool like Twitter, for example. Conversations are happening out there. They're happening about all of our brands, good, bad, indifferent, and it would be shocking to find a marketing organization that didn't gain some insight into their buyers just by listening. So step one, any marketer that, you know, don't wait for a social media strategy, don't wait for a social media committee, don't wait for blessing, get out there on Twitter, get out there on blogs, and listen. It doesn't have any negative effect. The worst that you can do is learn a few things about your organization. And from there, you'll start to understand which technology is more relevant for your organization. You know, some more consumer-oriented businesses might want to market on Facebook. The business-to-business businesses may find that Facebook's less relevant for them. I'm not going to tell you that you know one is more dominant over the other, but by listening to the buyers and understanding where the buyers are, you'll get an insight into how you might want to develop the sites where buyers can discover you as marketers. So, you know, embracing social media is really all about embracing the idea that the buyers are in control, and it really is a continuation of a lot of the themes that that Debbie, you and I have discussed for the last 30 minutes. So, if you as marketers want to give that buyer control of the information, social media is a wonderful set of technologies and set of approaches that allow you to do that.
Great advice. I just love the fact that you said that social media is just a continuation of the conversation, and you have to listen, because so often my clients will ask me, I need a social media strategy, and I say, why? They're like, well, taken back. But, you know, if your clients and your prospects are not there and they're not having the conversation, then social media is not something for you. If they're there, you need to find out where they are, and to your point, begin by listening. I think that is great advice. Well, again, I just want to come back to the book because, again, for anyone in the area of demand generation, taking a look at demand generation, really wanting to understand this tidal wave of change, really wanting to understand this perfect opportunity. The name of the book is Digital Body Language by Steve Woods, co-founder of Eloqua. And Steve, the book's available on Amazon?
That's correct. It's on Amazon.
Okay. All right. Well, you have been so wonderful to share your time and your insights. I encourage everyone to read the book. It's simply wonderful. And one of my personal goals in 2009 is to get this book required reading in an MBA program that I work with here in Atlanta at Georgia Tech. I think all the marketers would get great insight from that. So, Steve, thank you so much. We really enjoyed talking to you today.
Thank you, Debbie. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.